You're listening to Family Talk, the radio broadcasting division of the James Dobson Family Institute. I am that James Dobson, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us today.
Well, welcome to Family Talk, the broadcast division of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Roger Marsh, and we have a unique interview to share with you today, one that is very close to Dr. Dobson's heart. It was recorded several years ago and features a conversation with the late Dr. Ken Hutcherson. Now, if you've never heard of Ken Hutcherson, also known as Hutch, you are in for a real treat. Just a moment, we'll get into that conversation. But first, this reminder, with the election just being days away, make sure you check out all the resources available to you at drjamesdobson.org/countdown to decision 2024. In fact, we've just added a couple of new videos that will help you, especially if you're in one of the swing states. So check out our Countdown to Decision 2024 video podcasts and also get the swing state voter guides as well. Go to drjamesdobson.org/countdown-to-decision-2024. Now, today's guest here on Family Talk was very special to Dr. Dobson. Ken Hutcherson was senior pastor of Antioch Bible Church near Seattle, Washington, until he died of cancer in 2013 at the age of 61. As an African-American man born in Alabama in the era of segregation, Ken experienced blatant discrimination and other hardships due to the color of his skin, but he went on to play successfully in the National Football League and then spent more than two decades training young people to go on the offensive, this time for Jesus Christ. And now, let's get into part one of Dr. James Dobson's conversation with Dr. Ken Hutcherson on today's edition of Family Talk.
We are really pleased to have a man's man here with us in the studio today, someone whom I have come to appreciate and respect profoundly. Our guest is Dr. Ken Hutcherson. I call him Hutch because he's my great friend. He's the founder and senior pastor at Antioch Bible Church in Redmond, Washington, which is right next to Seattle, or part of it, I guess. And he is a powerful defender of righteousness and the cause of Christ. He is adamantly pro-life. He is adamantly pro-marriage and pro-abstinence and many of the other things that we believe in. Mm-hmm. And he loves the gospel and he preaches it straight. Hutch, I'm so glad to have you back with us today.
Anytime I can be with you, Doc, the privilege is mine, and thank you so much.
This is the 11th time that you have been here.
And you still want me back.
Well, sort of. It is always fun talking to this man. When I said that he's a man's man, he is really big enough to back up the pro-family agenda that we just talked about, and he's got the guts to do it. I don't know anybody that will take on the issues quite like Ken Hutcherson. He's a former NFL football player. He was a linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys, for the San Diego Chargers, and the Seattle Seahawks. And I have to tell you, I would not want to be a 180-pound tailback coming through the line and seeing him waiting on the other side. Do you miss NFL football?
No, Doc, I don't miss football at all. I just miss the checks.
It would be nice to go back and collect some of those, wouldn't it? Your church in Redmond, Washington, now has, I think you told me, about 3,500 people
that attend.
Yep, it calls
it home, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a going place.
It's an exciting place, Doc.
I told you that I want to get there and visit you. Tell them what you said to me about 20 minutes ago.
I don't know, Doc. I don't know if you're going to come and visit us. We're like Lay's potato chips. You can't do us just once.
Well, it's so good to have you here. I want to talk about you this time. We've talked about many other things when you've been here, but we were in Washington, D.C. a little over a year ago, and we were riding in a car together. We're on the way to May Day for Marriage there in Washington, D.C. I guess that was 2004, wasn't it?
Right.
All right. And in that conversation, you began talking about your childhood, and I was asking you questions.
Yeah.
And I said to you on that day, listen, I want to have you share some of these thoughts and some of this history with our listeners, because I was absolutely fascinated. Before we get to that, however, you just returned from Latvia.
Yeah, I sure did. I had wanted to do some things that can really change the world. I think that God has his hands on certain people that he's given opportunities to do things not only in Samaria and Galilee, but in the outer parts of the world.
Yeah.
And with adoptions, with family values, with religious freedom, that's all being attacked. I was invited by some pastors, and we had over 14 nations there. Over 4,000 people came. Yeah. And God just blessed it. So they asked me to come back because the homosexual community in the EU is really pushing to take over Europe and really to take over the UK. And Latvia was one of the only countries, Doc, that stood up. And so they are really getting bombarded. So I go, hey, I know how to fight this fight. So I went there and met with Parliament, and I met with the Minister of Integration. I met with the Minister of Interior. I met with the Minister of Human Rights. And we talked about the freedom that God has given religious people, and this country must stand. I got a letter from the President of Latvia, who doesn't like me very much because she is kind of behind this movement, even though 85% and more of the people are not. Her son is gay. And because of that, she had an agenda, and they had one bad incident in the whole country of Latvia, and they're trying to change all the laws. So I went there to tell them how they could keep that law from changing.
Now, you have fought those battles in Seattle, too, because there is a very strong activist homosexual community in that town. You're not against homosexuals as people. God loves every one of them and does not want them rejected or wounded.
That's right.
But the agenda that they come with is not biblical, and you have to oppose it.
I tell them all the time, I say, listen, I'm a pastor. I say I believe the Bible. I say that I'm going to follow the Bible. You don't follow the Bible. So evidently, I'm not going to be for you. Mm-hmm. I want you to join with me in obeying the Bible. And I will stand against anybody or anything that tells me I cannot stand on what the Bible teaches.
You took on Microsoft and the leaders over this issue, didn't you?
Absolutely, I did. Yeah. And, I said, when you had your internal policies of same-sex benefits. I said, I never said a word to you. I said, I got 200 or 300 of my parishioners that work at Microsoft. I said, did I ever say anything to you? They said, well, no. I said, well, when you took your policy, stepped out of your four walls, and I saw you down in Olympia, our state capital, pushing for same-sex laws being changed in our state. I said, when you started making your policy my policy, you made a serious mistake because you just gave me the right to make my policy your policy inside your four walls. And if you think I'm kidding, you keep pushing it. And they backed off after several meetings.
All right. I want to know how you got to be the man that we see today, a man that I, as I already said, respect highly. Let's go back to your childhood.
You bet.
All right. You were raised in a very, very strong family with a mom and dad who loved the Lord, took you to church. did I get that wrong?
Nah, you got it. Yeah.
All right. Tell me about it.
Well, I'm an illegitimate child, Doc. My mother was never married. And she turned 15 July 6th, and I was born July 14th. Mm-hmm. I was over 12 pounds.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
And we was almost brother and sister in ways because we were so close. Yeah. And my grandmother raised me mostly because my mother was made to go back to school. My grandmother said, you made one mistake, you're not going to make two.
Yeah.
And so she made her go back to school to finish high school. My big mama, I call her. I mean, I love my grandmother.
I call my grandmother Big Mama too.
Yeah.
Sure did, from the South.
That's right, bro.
Yeah.
And she was the only thing that literally was keeping me human. I was always out there. I was a renegade. I it was just born in me, I guess.
And you were big from the
earliest
years. I
was big from day one. Yeah. And my dad had nothing to do with me. Very occasionally, my father came from what we call the black bourgeois side of town. His family was well off. So to come over to what we call Bear Mash, which is where I grew up, Doc. Mm-hmm. Now, that literally was what we believed, that if a bear came down here, it would get mashed. Hmm. And we lived that. My aunt lived next door to me, and she was the local liquor house. And she had all the drunks there. And I, as a little boy, I remember a guy getting killed right in front of me with a rock. Guy hit him in the head right in front of me standing on the porch, killed him dead as a doorknob. Mm-hmm. And we would call the police in our neighborhood at night, and they wouldn't show up until the next day just to see who was cut or hurt. My aunt was so tough, and that's where I learned my toughness from. When people see how I grew up, they go, how could this guy ever become sane? And I didn't become sane until I met Jesus. But she was going out with this lady's husband who lived across the street from us. And the lady started talking one day about her going out with her husband. And my aunt got mad and says, names that we won't say on the Christian radio here, and says she wouldn't dare speak out loud against me. And they said, oh, yeah, she's saying that, but you better leave her husband alone. She said, well, I'm going to show you right now whose husband he is. And my aunt took a large shot of white lightning, downed it like it was water, walked across the street, knocked on the door of this woman's house, and says, I hear you telling me I can't mess with your husband anymore. Well, I'm telling you, I'm coming here right now to take him home. He's going to stay with me tonight. And she said, no, you're not. And back in the day, you remember the old barbershops?
Yeah.
It was this long straight razors. Mm-hmm. This lady pulled, because everyone's afraid of my aunt, Aunt May. She pulled this razor out and sliced my aunt across the back of her face down her neck with that razor. My aunt took that razor from her, Doc, folded it up, put it in her pocket, beat her up in her own house, and then told her husband, pack up, you're going with me tonight.
My goodness.
Pulled him out of the house, brought him over to her house, and remember, she got sliced open with that razor. She took kerosene with my own eyes. She took kerosene, poured it down her neck on that cut, and then took a needle and black sewing thread and sewed her neck up why she drank and
that
talked.
Is that is tough.
I mean, tough.
Now, you grew up in that
atmosphere. I grew up in that.
So you saw a lot of violence as a child.
Extreme. I mean, violence. It was survival of the fittest because there wasn't the programs that you have today. There was. I remember getting electricity in my home as a little boy. I remember having to wonder, what will we eat? Where would the food come from? My grandfather was one of the biggest alcoholics that you've ever seen in your life. He would work all week, Doc. And looking back now, I can understand because he was treated like subhuman. I mean, he would go and he would work, and there was no blacks on TV. There was no blacks on radio. I mean, Amos and Andy later on, I mean, if you remember some of those shows, it was always depicted as indolent and lazy and shiftless and comedians. I mean, that was what we had. And he was so frustrated of taking care of seven kids. They had 14 kids, all born at home. Seven lived and seven died.
My goodness.
So you can imagine what he was going through. And the only relief he had was to work all week, come home. By the time he got there late Friday night, he had drank all of his money up, and he came in fighting. And the one he would fight was my grandmother. And my grandmother was asked many a day, just leave him. I mean, he's going to kill you one day. And he did worry her to death, literally. And she says, listen, I married him for better or for worse. Right now, it just happens to be worse. I gave my word to God, and that was it. Now, that was the secret hiding underneath me that kept me sane as long as she was alive.
We are talking to Dr. Ken Hutcherson, the pastor and founder of Antioch Bible Church in Redmond, Washington. We've been friends for a number of years, and he is a walking miracle. what God has done with him. I mean, to be as committed as he is to the cause of Christ and being willing to defend it against all odds comes out of that environment where there wasn't a man in your life that you could respect. Did you go to school and carry that violence into environment?
Oh, absolutely. The one thing I learned was white people didn't think that black people were smart. So I read all the time because, you know, I didn't like people very much. And my mom and I moved out from my grandfather's and grandmother's house when I was six. And I hated, I hated leaving my grandmother. And even though I had an uncle, well, was six girls, one boy that lived. And so when we moved, I spent a lot of time alone, and I would sneak down to see my grandmother, you know, every now and then. But I did a lot of reading because I realized through this reading, if you can't beat them, use them. Oh. And if they think you're dumb, man, what an advantage it is. Oh. You can act dumb and get anything you want.
Did you survive academically in school?
Oh,
did
my
you do
goodness,
well in school?
Yeah. I mean, I was so competitive that I said once I finally got to go to an integrated school, I said, ain't a white person in the world going to beat me in anything. And if a white kid got a B, I wanted a B plus. If he got an A, I wanted an A plus. If he got an A plus, I'm going to find some way to bring an apple to the teacher to get some extra points.
You lived in an environment of racism. You know, I think there's still an awful lot of people in this country who don't have any knowledge of what he's talking about. I've lived long enough to remember it. And as a matter of fact, Shirley and I really enjoy watching old black and white movies from the 30s and 40s and so on. And it is embarrassing to see the way blacks are depicted. No wonder there is that residue of anger.
Oh, yeah. Live that, Doc. I mean, it's one thing to see it on television. It's another thing to be the person on the television. And that's who I was. And that's how I had to live. And
did you hate white people?
Oh, Doc. There is no words for the hatred I had. That's the reason why I played football. After integration started, I was a better baseball player than I ever was a football player. I had a tryout for the St. Louis Cardinals baseball team when I was 14. My mother wouldn't let me go because she knew I would probably get into some serious problems if I had money. And so to hurt white people legally, I started playing football because I hit someone with a baseball, and they got mad. Or I spike them when I slid into the base. They got mad. But I can knock them out in football, and they patted me on the back. I said, man, now this is a game.
And you were good at it.
God had given me a lot of ability and a lot of talent in that game.
Yeah,
I was good at it. And the end of my junior year, football year, and my senior year, Doc, they wouldn't even let me practice in pads. I practiced in pads in my high school, and this is before I met Christ, this is my BC days, I sent three white kids to the hospital in one practice. And that's how vicious I was. But being an honor roll student, what are they going to do?
Well, they give you a scholarship. Where'd you go to college?
I became a Christian my senior year in high school after a real bad motorcycle wreck. My junior year, I was not supposed to ever walk again and not supposed to straight, you know, and I was never supposed to play any athletics again. And I didn't know it, but, Doc, I thought it was me. I didn't know it was God giving me a second chance. I got hit by a car on a motorcycle, one of the few blacks in our whole city and community that had a motorcycle because I was running a protection agency. Kids would pay me so much money a week not to beat them up, but I say that it was because they needed protection. And so I was making a pretty good living.
You're a bad dude is what you were.
At this time, and I got to the hospital. They rushed me to the hospital. And I'm going to tell you what hatred can do for you. It can make you so stupid. Doc, you didn't lose any sleep over me hating you. The whites in the community had a little fear and trepidation because they could run into me. But they weren't losing any sleep. I mean, hatred was eating me alive. I mean, only thing I could do was to have more hatred. And it got to the point where hatred was controlling me so badly that when my grandmother passed away at age 8, I did not have one voluntary conversation. If my mom talked to me, I would answer her. But after my grandmother died, took me 8 years before I had one voluntary conversation with my mother. It wasn't until I became a Christian.
Mm-hmm. How did you become a Christian?
When I was all alone in the house and I used to read and mom would go to work and my grandmother passed away. No, it was before my grandmother passed because I was five. Roy Rogers and Del Evans.
Yeah.
Was on a TV show one night.
She was on this broadcast many years ago.
And I watched them because I wanted to see Trigger. I didn't like white people. Yeah. But, you know,
liked horses.
I love horses and dogs. And to this day, even. And so I was going to watch to see if they were going to let Trigger do some tricks. So I'm watching. And sure enough, God was gracious enough that he brought Trigger out at the beginning of the show. And I watched the remainder of the show because he's going to bring Bullet out. He's going to bring Trigger back. And they start talking about losing their daughter, Angel Unaware, the book they wrote.
Right.
And they said that we believe she's in heaven and that she died before the age of accountability and that everyone one day is going to have to face this God guy. And it scared me to death as a five-year-old. The Roy Rogers and Dale Evans with Trigger and Bullet and guns had to bow down to this God guy. I didn't have the slightest idea who in the world he was. And I remember them talking about the age of accountability they thought was 12. And I go, man, I got about 7 years before I had to deal with this God guy. And I thought it was someone you meet on the street and he says, I'm God, what you gonna do with me? And that was my concept of God. 11 years later, my senior year in high school, after that motorcycle wreck, I was back on the field. I had worked hard because the doctor told me that was white. I never would do it again. I told him, you're a lie. No white man's ever gonna tell me what I'm not gonna do. And I would crawl out of bed at night to work out. And I thought it was me, but it was God giving me that second chance. And 11 years later, sitting in the high school, I thought about what Roy Rogers and Dale Evans said. And I said, God, if you're real, I can't do it. Here I am. I said, I know how to make A's. So I went and picked the Bible up to study it like I had to take a test on it. I know how to obey my coach. I said, God, now you are my coach. And I know if I want to be on first team, I had to know the playbook. And I start putting in 5, 6, 7 hours a day in the Bible, and I've never had one backslidden day since.
My goodness, what a story. That is exciting, and the hatred went away, didn't it?
The first thing, man, I spent 16 years trying to prove I want a white person in the world better than I was. When I bowed my head today and said, God, if you're real, he hit me so strong. He says, you spent all this time trying to prove I want a white person in the world better than you. Guess what? I die for white people too, and you're no better than any white person. And that's when I start standing for any discrimination and any wrong, which led us to the ministry we're going to be dealing with in adoption.
That was the end of your racism.
That was the end of my racism that day. And so when people tell me, well, I'm just raised that way, I'm just that way, I tell them, you don't know God and quit telling lies on my God because he changes lives.
Well, he certainly does. Hutch, your story is very inspirational to me, and I know that our listeners feel that way, too. I'd really like you to stay with us for another day because we still need to hear about where you went to college, and I'd also like you to talk about your NFL football career and then, of course, how the Lord brought you into the ministry. But for now, Hutch, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Doctor.
Well, you've been listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk and part one of Dr. Dobson's classic interview with the late Ken Hutcherson. Ken's story is a great reminder that no one is too far or too hard or too broken for God to reach and change. God can use anything, even an old TV show, to speak into someone's life and heart. In Ezekiel chapter 36, verse 26, we read, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. Let Dr. Ken Hutcherson's testimony be an encouragement to you today to keep praying for your friends and family who don't yet know the Lord. They are not lost causes. God is much too powerful for anyone to be a lost cause. Amen? Now, to learn more about Dr. Ken Hutcherson or to listen to any of today's conversation that you might have missed, you can access it on the Family Talk app or visit drjamesdobson.org/Family Talk. That's drjamesdobson.org/Family Talk. And keep in mind that with the election just a couple of days away, we've added a couple of new video podcasts to our special website, drjamesdobson.org/countdown to decision 2024. Once you go there, you will find Those videos I just mentioned, you'll see interviews featuring Eric Metaxas, Pastor Sammy Rodriguez, Riley Gaines, and more. In addition, you'll also find a voting guide, just an example of how you as a Christian can vote biblically in this presidential election. And we also have voting guides for all 10 swing states as well. For all of the information I just mentioned, plus Dr. Owen Strand's ebook on why it's important for Christians to vote, I encourage you to go to drjamesdobson.org/countdown-to-decision-2024. You will not regret taking a good look at these resources, praying over them, and then asking God to give you wisdom and guidance as you vote. And encourage your Christian friends to vote as well. Our friend George Barna estimates that nearly 51 million people who profess faith in Christ will not be voting in this current presidential election. If we want biblical values to continue to be the guiding force in our nation, we must, as Christians, be good stewards with our vote. Well, I'm Roger Marsh. For Dr. James Dobson and all of us here at the JDFI, thanks so much for listening, and be sure to join us again next time right here for part two of Dr. Dobson's classic conversation with pastor and author Dr. Ken Hutcherson. That's coming up next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.